content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And in this episode, we'll dig a little deeper into the February issue of Our State Magazine, which is featuring articles all about things we love. How appropriate for February. The first article is Vintage Cuts. Generations of customers have made their way to this Mecklenburg County barbershop for a trim, a shine, and to share special moments together. And on this, there's a picture of the classic red, white, and blue barbershop, round barbershop sign. And the photo here is of a, says, today the familiar striped pole at Potts Barbershop calls to men from all walks of life, regardless of race, religion, or politics. But it hasn't always been so easy to get a shave, a trim, and a chat. Cornelius Mayor Woody Washam has fond memories of his earliest flat-top haircuts. It was the late 1950s, and his dad would take him down to the old Brick Row building on Main Street. The barber was Wilson Potts, a soft-spoken, amiable man with gently sloping eyes, a well-trimmed mustache, and huge hands. The mayor laughs. To me, as a kid, he was just this massive man, Washam says, with hands as big as I've ever seen in my life. By the time Washam was in his teens and in the early 60s, the shop had moved from its original location at Brick Road to a storefront along Catawba Avenue, where it still sits almost 70 years after its establishment in 1957. Potts Barbershop, the oldest and longest-lasting black-owned business in this small Mecklenburg County town north of Charlotte, is the only place in Cornelius that Washam has ever gone to get a haircut. As a teen, he'd walk to the shop from his home on Church Street. As an adult, he'd amble over from his office at a local bank. Washam wasn't the only kid who got his earliest flat tops from Wilson Potts. For more than four decades, Potts was the most popular barber in town. Several generations of men in the area first climbed into a barber's chair at the shop, many of them now town leaders and local historians, lawyers, bankers, blue-collar workers. In the old days, before the civil rights movement heated up, before hippies began growing out their hair and avoiding barbershops, local men and their sons would line up for hours outside Potts Barbershop on weekends to get their weekly cuts and their local news. It was crowded, Washam recalls. I mean, back then, everybody in town went to that shop, so you had to hit it at just the right time to avoid having to wait. And it was loud. A lot of talk about politics, the mayor remembers. Local politics, national politics, all kinds of political conversations went on in there, and a lot of opinions about different things going on in town. Gossipy kind of things, Washam says. And those men would just laugh, enjoy themselves, and have a good time in there. But it was always, as far as I can remember, good, clean conversation. Wilson Potts died back in 2000, but not before passing the business along to his middle son. Now everybody in town knows and loves Mickey Potts, just like they knew and loved Wilson. On a quiet Saturday morning, Mickey relaxes in a swivel chair next to an old wooden desk in the shop's back room. He's wearing a smudged barber's apron over a dark blue sweatshirt. His close-cropped hair and goatee as white as chalk. At 88 years old, Mickey's been a fixture at Potts Barbershop since he was a 10-year-old earning extra change, shining shoes while his dad cut hair. In the main part of the shop, men sit in chairs lined up on the same linoleum floor along the same wood-paneled wall, waiting to get a trim from barber Chad Hill or from Mickey's business partner, Mark Muldrow. Mickey soon shuffles into the front area of the shop to greet customers who've just walked in off the streets. Pointing to vintage photos on the walls, Mickey gives all the credit for the shop's longevity to his dad. From early on, Wilson Henry Potts was a bold and strategic businessman. Born in 1912 in the area of Cornelius that now sits under Lake Norman, he eventually moved with his family to the black enclave of Smithfield, Smithville, then just located outside the town limits. Wilson was 14 when a family friend up in Mooresville taught him how to cut hair. By 1935, he was working at the Jim Yarn Mill during the week and cutting hair on the weekends. 11 years later, he quit the mill and began barbering full-time at the black-owned Norton Barbershop in the Brick Row building. He was soon recruited as the first black barber in the white-owned Blakely Barbershop, two doors down. A black barber working alongside white colleagues was not typical in Jim Crow-era North Carolina. Brick Row was hopping in the early years. In addition to the two barbershops, there was a string of other businesses, including the town post office, a sandwich shop, a jewelry store, and a public shower in the basement that the barbershop's male customers could use for 25 cents. It was a gathering place, Wilson told the Charlotte Observer in 1990. We had a pool table in the back room, and that really brought them in. We did all right in those days. There were two mills in town then and a lot of farmers. We'd be real busy on Saturdays. Mickey's older brother, James, was the first Potts kid to shine shoes at the shop. He later passed the job along to Mickey and their younger brother, Ron. In 1952, Clarence Blakely retired and let Wilson run the shop. Shortly thereafter, Mickey set off for barber school in Winston-Salem, and by 1956, he was working for his dad full-time. A year later, Blakely sold the business to Wilson, and in 1960, Potts Barbershop moved to its current spot on Catawba Avenue. All of the patrons in the shop this morning are black, but it wasn't always like that. When we started out, Mickey says, we were cutting white hair only. We weren't allowed to cut black hair. Barbershops weren't integrated back then. He glances out the front window, memories filling his head. But when the movement heated up in the late 50s and early 60s, black people started complaining about it. He was talking about the civil rights movement. In 1968, students at nearby Davidson College boycotted Johnson's Barbershop, a black-owned business in that town that also catered to white people only. The owner, Ralph Johnson, eventually capitulated, integrating the shop, but not without pushback from his white customers. Mickey's father knew that he'd eventually be faced with the same dilemma, but he kept doing business the way he'd always done it. Until one day in 1972, when Toots Burton, a young black man who worked at the farmer's company feed and seed store next door, walked in and said, "Hey, Potts, how about a haircut?" The venerable barber knew it was an act of rebellion, but he took it in stride. My dad, he said, "Have a seat." Mickey recalls with a laugh, and Daddy cut his hair. It was as simple as that. From that day on, Potts Barbershop has welcomed anyone who walks in the door to get a haircut, hang out with each other, chat about local issues, maybe watch a ball game on the TV. We didn't have any trouble at all, Mickey says. It really wasn't a big deal. But it was a big deal in Davidson. The controversy at Johnson's Barbershop eventually led to the shuttering of that business. Yet here in Cornelius, nothing changed. No one balked. No one stopped coming to Wilson Potts for their weekly trims. Washam attributes the shop's ability to weather the storms of racial unrest to its unflinching owner. For decades, Potts had worked quietly behind the scenes for civil rights and was one of those eventually responsible for getting Smithville annexed into Cornelius. He would just give the right advice to the right people in a very non-threatening way, Washam says, and many of the politicians back in the day followed through on his suggestions because he cut their hair. They knew him, and they respected him. Mickey Potts doesn't talk much about while cutting hair, but he does a whole lot of listening, just like his dad. He gestures to one of the barber chairs, and his smile becomes a grin. He's remembering the time when a couple of customers nearly came to blows. One man was sitting in the chair next to the window. Mickey was working on one of the middle chairs, cutting the other man's hair. A discussion came up between the two guys in the chairs. "I don't know what it was about, but it sure got heated," Mickey recalls. "Well, I was trying to turn my customer this way, and the other boy was trying to turn his customer around the other way so they couldn't see each other. It didn't work. The two men just kept craning their necks to look at each other in the eyes." Mickey lets out a big belly laugh. "We got through it somehow," he says, shaking his head. "We got through it safely and without incident." As he reminisces, a few more customers walk in from the street and take seats next to the wood-paneled wall. "Let me show you something," Mickey says, pointing to the front window that once looked out onto the Reeves Mill, but now shows a modern Cornelius with rows of SUVs parked outside. "When we started out, we had a checkerboard next to that window, and we had guys stop by just to play checkers. One man who lived 22 miles away in Mount Holly bought a bicycle and parked it in Cornelius. He'd catch the bus from his home, ride over, get on his bike, and just cruise around town. And he'd always stop in at Potts Barbershop to play checkers," Mickey said. "People'd come from all over just to be here, to be in a welcoming community among people who really care about each other, regardless of race or social status, regardless of religious or political opinions. Maybe it was those very differences that made hanging out at Potts Barbershop so very special." And if you're interested, Potts Barbershop is located at 21324 Catawba Avenue in Cornelius, North Carolina. I'll read a quick little blurb about a couple of the photos in here. "The interior of Potts Barbershop hasn't changed much over the past 60-some years, but its longevity as Cornelius's oldest black-owned business has earned it historic recognition." And there's a plaque here on the wall outside the shop. It says, "Town of Cornelius, Stowe Cornelius Building, Potts Barbershop, circa 1923, designated historic landmark on October 4th, 2021. That's pretty special. Before I move to the next article, there's something here that may be of interest to my listeners. Our state has introduced a storytellers podcast series. It says, "Listen as the pages of the magazine come to life in the Storytellers Podcast, a new series featuring the voices of our state writers. Enjoy Editor-in-Chief Elizabeth Hudson's nostalgic reflections as she reads her monthly letter aloud. Other featured columnists include T. Edward Nickens, who does The Ramblin' Man, Dr. Eleanor Spice Rice, who does North Carolina Naturally, writes that, Sherry Castle, who writes A Taste of Our State, Brad Campbell, who writes the column on Hidden History, and Mark Kemp, North Carolina Noted. Those are the columnists included. So to find this and to listen to Our State wherever you are, in the car, on a walk, or as you're cooking dinner, you can learn more at ourstate.com/storytellers. ourstate.com/storytellers. We don't often get to, I don't often get to read those other articles, the other columns on a normal basis, because the magazine is pretty large. So that might be an interesting thing for you to take a look at. All right. This next article is entitled The Paper Trail. A Greensboro family and their friends have honored a historic triad company, Dillard Paper, by keeping its small stationery shop alive. In doing so, they've created a loyal community. Stand with Eileen Herman near one of the three aisles of If It's Paper in Greensboro, even for a few minutes, and you can't help but notice. The door opens, someone walks in, Herman looks up, and the place becomes as comfortable as a front porch, as familiar as a nickname. Excuse me. She expects it every time. "It's like we should have rocking chairs out front," Herman says. "Everyone who works here knows everyone who walks in the door. We're always like, oh my gosh, I haven't seen you in forever." Herman and her 14 part-time employees help customers with life's most poignant moments, from birth to death and everything in between. People come in to pick up a cake box, find party napkins, or place an order for a customized Christmas card. They come in for a wedding or party invitations, announcements of a birth, a baptism, or a graduation. Moments that frame lives. Those moments also frame the lives of the shop's longtime employees. All of them have lived in Greensboro for decades, and they have a catchy collective nickname for themselves, the Paper Dolls. To Patty Stravolakis, her fellow employees are like family members. "While I've worked here, I've lost both my parents," she says, "and at my mom's service here in Greensboro, I looked up and saw everyone I worked with. It makes me get teary when I think about it." So while this little shop may be all about paper, it's also about family and community. The story of If It's Paper is long and circuitous. It's a story about the legacy of a family-owned company that's undergone many changes, employed generations of local residents, and keeps delivering the paper year after year. The seeds of Iffit's paper were sown in 1978 when Harrison Stewart, a 22-year-old graduate of NC State University, returned home to create a life. He'd heard that Dillard Paper Company promoted from within and treated its employees with respect. So he met with the company's president, John Dillard, in his walnut-paneled office in Greensboro and was hired. The company had been founded by Dillard's uncle more than a half century earlier. In 1926, Stark Dillard, a savvy 32-year-old entrepreneur with an eighth-grade education, left Lynchburg, Virginia, moved to Greensboro, and opened his little paper company downtown. Starting with one salesman and one secretary, he turned Dillard Paper into the largest independent paper distributor in the Southeast. That's where the company was when Stewart began in Dillard's management training program. He stayed with the company for 36 years, rising through the ranks and earning a reputation as a compassionate boss with a whip-smart mind for numbers. In 1991, International Paper, the global company known as IP, based in Memphis, bought Dillard, and Stewart soon became an IP vice president with various responsibilities. Later, he moved up to the group vice president, overseeing a few of the company's divisions. The phrase, Iffit's Paper, has been the old slogan for Dillard. It was also the name of the retail outlet stores that the company launched in the late 1970s. The stores sold paper products in smaller quantities, catering to the needs of regular people rather than companies. IP inherited Iffit's Paper and operated 27 locations throughout the Southeast. That number, though, never grew. In 2008, IP started closing some of the retail stores, and by the end of 2010, the company was set to close them all. That included the store in Greensboro. This was disappointing to Stewart, and he knew he had to tell his wife, Sherry. After all, Dillard Paper had helped to make the couple's life, and if its paper was an important part of the company. So one night, after work, he sat her down, and he broke the news. International Paper is going to close the rest of the Iffit's Paper stores, he said with a sigh. Oh, my gosh, Sherry responded. But I've got an idea, Stewart said, perking up. I believe we could open it back up. I believe we could make it happen. Sherry smiled. That would be kind of fun, she said. That conversation that night changed everything. The Stewarts bought the name for $500 and reopened the Iffit's Paper shop in Greensboro in 2011. They created a place of friendship and camaraderie for the paper dolls, and Sherry discovered a new outlet away from her former career as a diabetes educator. She also discovered a way to work with her daughter, Elizabeth. As an undergraduate at UNC Chapel Hill and for a while after graduation, Elizabeth had led backpacking trips in Alaska, Peru, and Costa Rica. She planned to continue her outdoor adventures for at least another year, but a request from her mom put the kibosh on that. You've got to stay with me through Christmas, Sherry told her daughter. You have to help me with the store before you live your dream. Elizabeth did and fell in love with it. She began working in the Greensboro store and started going on buying trips with her mom and Herman to New York City and Atlanta. In 2013, Elizabeth opened her own Iffit's Paper store in Raleigh, and she's now expanded the inventory at both stores to attract younger customers. She knows that works for new families. She and her husband, Rob Belk, have two young sons of their own, Johnny and Carr. Family and paper are as important to Elizabeth as they are to her parents. In her Greensboro living room is a framed love letter written in pencil by her great-grandfather. He wrote it on his 18th wedding anniversary and gave it to his wife, Elizabeth's namesake. The younger Elizabeth treasures it so much that she can repeat the lines by heart. If we ever had a fire, she said, pointing to the letter, this would be one of those things I would grab first. It means the most to me. Family and tradition are important to everyone involved with Iffit's Paper. Stand with Dorothy Edwards Nutt, one of the Greensboro employees, and watch. Someone will come in, spot her, and exclaim, almost in a shout, Dottie B! Everyone knows her. Dottie B can trace her family roots in Greensboro to the turn of the 20th century. She's lived here for most of her life. As for her nickname, the B is for her middle name, Brantley. Her dad began calling her that when she was a baby, and the nickname just stuck. Greensboro is a big part of my heart, Dottie B says, and community. That's what creates your character. It makes you who you are. If It's Paper creates that kind of community by honoring the family legacy of Dillard Paper, keeping its rich history alive. In doing so, Harrison Stewart keeps alive his own feelings about the company and the strong bonds that it forged in Greensboro for nearly a century. During the course of his years in the paper business, Stewart has hired Eileen Herman twice. She began at Dillard Paper in 1994, a year after she graduated from UNC Greensboro. The first time Stewart hired her was to run the company's customer service department. Then, in October 2013, he called Herman into his office to make her a second office. He wanted her to be the manager of his and Sherry's revived If It's Paper shop. "I don't know anything about retail," she said. "But you know paper," Stewart replied. "You'll be fine." There's a family and a company connection to Stravoulakis' employment, too. Stewart knew her brother, Pete Moffitt, who'd worked at IP for 24 years as a sales representative. Moffitt died in 2013 from complications of amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, better known as ALS. He was just 51. Stewart was once Moffitt's boss. And to this day, when he comes into If It's Paper and sees Stavroulakis, he'll tear up almost every time. "I sure do miss your brother," he'll tell her. When Stewart retired from IP in 2014, the company presented him with a gift. That same walnut paneling from John Dillard's Greensboro office from the very room where Stewart was hired when he was 22. He'd spent a lot of his life in that office. Now it's in his home a few steps away from the front door. Stewart's life after Dillard Paper has been far from easy. In 1984, 2 years after marrying Sherry, he was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, a chronic disease that attacks the central nervous system. For years, the only noticeable sign of it was the way that Stewart dragged his right foot slightly when he walked. But after his retirement, the disease began to worsen. Stewart now gets around his home in a motorized wheelchair. He can't walk. He can't write. He changes positions often to prevent muscle spasms and to help himself breathe. And yet, there's a silver lining. Stewart's daughter, Elizabeth, has now settled in Greensboro, and so have his sons, Will and Granger. Their dad's knees were a big part of the pull back home. That's why their decisions is explained by the conversations. The why behind their decisions is explained by the conversations the kids heard growing up. They'd be out hunting deer or doves or gathering as a family at Camp Bryan, a 10,000-acre retreat in eastern North Carolina. And their dad would begin reciting the Scout Law. A former Eagle Scout, Stewart would talk to his kids about the role that integrity, responsibility, and character play in any life. Those lessons have taken root. The company legacy that they've continued has helped to ensure that. So yes, If It's Paper is all about paper. But for the Stewarts and for everybody who works there or shops there, it's about so much more. If you're interested, you can find If It's Paper in Greensboro at 212 East Cornwallis Drive, Greensboro, North Carolina, 27408. And check out their website at ifitspaper.org. The Raleigh location is at 445 Daniels Street. That's Daniels Street, Raleigh, North Carolina, 27605. Okay, we'll round out this episode, I think, with our State Supper Club. This is a new column for our state magazine. Gather around the table for meals and memories. The spice of life. A full pantry can provide flavor, seasoning, and with a little imagination, sparks of inspiration. This cake is full of warming spices, is finished with some added heat and a scoop of vanilla or butter pecan ice cream. This is the, they have a picture of spice cake with hot honey glaze. And it does look pretty tasty. Lots of chunky pecans and moist cake, it looks like. So what's for dinner? A question many dread, but one that I welcome as a challenge. It's an opportunity to step out of my comfort zone, to spice things up a bit. To uncover the answer, I first open the refrigerator to see what needs to be used. Onions, peppers, herbs, maybe leftovers from the day before. With a starting ingredient list in my head, I then head over to the pantry. That's where the creative juices begin to really flow. My spice rack is a hanging shelf that runs the length of the door. Whenever I open it, I think to myself, one day I'll alphabetize everything. But for now, I'm happy just knowing where the cumin and the garlic powder are. The longer I gaze at the spices, the more I start dreaming of new desserts. Maybe a spice cake. Hold on, we have to eat dinner first. My eyes scan the seafood stock, my collection of vinegars, assorted nuts, coconut milk, and fish sauce. Wait, fish sauce. I've got it. Flashback. I'm sitting at a table in one of my favorite restaurants in Greensboro, 1618 West, known for delicious and innovative seafood dishes. Before me is a coconut shrimp stew with an orange hue and a scent that suggests layers of flavor. The menu might not have listed fish sauce, but as a trained chef, I know that's one of the secret ingredients used to bring out a rich, salty taste. Now that I have my dish in mind, it's time to get to work. I make use of the leftover vegetables, cilantro, stock, spices, and sauces. It's not 1618 West's recipe, but it's pretty darn close. Now it's your turn to be creative in the kitchen. If your pantry is anything like mine, it's full of spices and staples, maybe some that haven't yet had their time to shine. If you look closely enough, those ingredients might transform into memories of decadent flavors or dinners that surprised you. Go ahead and reach for those forgotten bottles or that untouched spice. They might just make your night. Lynn Wells is a personal chef with more than 20 years of experience in the food and hospitality industry. And if you're interested, you can always go online to Our State Magazine online and check out some of these recipes. There's a spice cake with hot honey glaze that I mentioned on as the lead story. There's a shrimp with red curry and coconut sauce recipe. Both of those look quite intriguing. Well, I think that's all we've got time for today. And we've run out of time. That music sounds says it's time for us to go. I hope you've enjoyed Our State Magazine and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. For any comments or questions, please give us a call at 919-832-5138. And so long until next time.